Hello everyone, my name is Bernie Miro and I'm a cartoonist in a city that's full of them. Today though, my job is to interview Robin Fisher, the host of the Onomatopoeia Show, the new radio program to be featured on CJLO 1690 AM. Hi Robin.
Hi Bernie.
How is it that you, a young lady, have come to be a champion of comic art?
It's a very good question, Bernie. I would say that it started with my father, and he used to bring home comic strip books for me to read, like For Better or For Worse and Calvin and Hobbes and Farside. And so from that spawned a huge love of graphic art and literature, is what I feel comics are.
Wow. And, well, I just mention it because it's fairly unusual in my experience to see a woman, especially an intelligent young woman like yourself, who will give any time of day to this much pooped upon medium.
I don't really look at it that way because I come from a background of books. I used to read a lot, and I still do, those books without pictures. And whenever a book made me feel a certain way, whether it happy, angry, sad, loved, whatever, like just the feelings that were created by people's words, I loved those books. And then when I discovered comics, and comics could do the same thing, but also include art as well, and, you know, sometimes you have this amazing amalgamation of beautiful art and amazing storytelling, how can people not champion comics?
I agree with you 100%, and I'm amazed at the stigma that surrounds comic art in general. I remember trying to loan my sister a copy of The Watchmen, and she eventually gave it back to me saying, I can't read this, I'm on the bus.
See, that's one of the things about my show that's very important, is the fact that the show is going to cater to all sorts of people, all ranges, all ages, all audience types. And the thing is with your sister, you know, some people, they actually don't even really know how to read comics. It's like a whole new way of reading because it's a sequential art. You have to know where your eyes are supposed to travel. People need to know that. And it's, yeah, you probably should have started your sister with either something really cute. If she had cats, you could give her What's Michael. Or something really girly, like maybe Strangers in Paradise.
Right. Well, I think what really got to her were the looks that she received when she would open up a comic book on the bus. And she really felt like people were looking at her in a sort of derisive way, as if she's doing something that was kind of funny. You know, reading comic books in public. Like, somehow that is any less than reading a novel or what have you. It's a wonderful medium for entertainment, and I fully 100% behind your attempt to, like, drag it into the light, you know?
Well, I gotta tell you, I just don't care about it. I remember one time I was reading C. Scott Morris's book Visitations, and I was literally bawling my eyes out on the bus because of this beautifully drawn, amazing comic. The story hit me so hard. And I was surrounded by suits, and I knew they were looking at me as I was sobbing on the bus, but I don't care. Comics rule.
That's right. Well, who's the loser? The one that gets a great deal of enjoyment out of entertainment, or somebody else who's sneering and kind of dissing other forms of stuff without even really enjoying anything like that themselves? I think they're the losers.
Hear, hear.
Okay, so tell us a bit about your educational background. You come from British Columbia, do you not?
Sort of, a little. I was born in Winnipeg, but my father was in the military, so we moved constantly. And so I've lived, like, in Germany and Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, Toronto. For a brief period of time, well, not a brief, sorry, for a long period of time, I was living in Vancouver for 11 years. So that's kind of like, I consider Vancouver my home.
Right, and you went to the University of British Columbia there?
Not at all. No. Yeah, it's a common misconception because I had the radio show. I had a radio show for 7 years at the University of British Columbia, and the whole time I never went to the University of British Columbia.
It's scandalous.
Actually, it's ironic too because at the same time, like, I'm doing the same thing here. I don't go to Concordia, but yet I'm on their station.
But it's a wonderful school, and
it
we
is.
Really
we like
having it here in Montreal.
I actually teach at the Concordia Daycare, so I teach a lot of the faculty's children and students as well, their children.
Oh, wow. And there's not much tougher work than that. So, your plans for the program upcoming, can you give us an indication of what we can expect?
Well, there's going to be, like, lots of interviews, reviews. I've got some old radio plays like Dick Tracy and Batman. I've found this old tape that's excellent. It's like the Batman musical special. So it's a series of songs telling Batman stories from the 60s. It's excellent. There's just going to be like this wide variety of stuff. Like I collect action figures and I'm really into movies and comics that are turned into movies and movies that are turned into comics. And I read a lot of books as well. I'm into all sorts of different kinds of music. So the show is going to have like a wide variety of stuff, but it's the main theme will be comics.
So there's going to be quite a bit of music on your show.
I usually have time for about four or five songs. There will always be an opening theme that's superhero or comic cartoon related. And yeah, I listen to a lot of different music, a lot of new music. As well, whenever I have a guest on air or even an interview subject, they usually dictate what the music is going to be. So it's a good way to be exposed to even a wider variety of music.
Oh, that's kind. Do you have any guests that you're expecting to come up, like, in the next...
I have no expectations, because I haven't started asking anybody yet, and right. I really got to get my bum in gear.
But you're in the middle of Montreal, and Montreal is just full of cartoons.
I have lots of desire to ask a lot of people. I really want to interview Pat McEwan. I swore that the very first interview I would do on my new show was going to be the artist and illustrator of Beautiful Stories for Ugly Children. I don't know if you remember that comic. It was a...
Piranha Press.
Yeah, it came out in the 90s, an offshoot of DC, and I find it to be a very brilliant, genius comic. And so those guys are definitely going to be first. Again, Pat McEwan. There's a lot of French-Canadian cartoonists I want to interview that I'm very interested in.
Right, Pat McEwan is an artist who has worked for the mainstream but has a big artistic kind of tradition as well. He's currently going to Concordia and taking his master's in fine arts, and he's still... produces a lot of comic art, and as a matter of fact, he's just finished a project working with Johann Sfar over in Europe, a huge European superstar who is...
I love his work so much.
Yeah, and he's working for a publisher now, Gallimard, and he's brought Patrick on board to do a graphic novel in a series that they're doing there, so Patrick is really riding high currently on doing a lot of great work.
Yep. Well, I look forward to talking to him about that. And one of my big exciting things about moving to Montreal was just the fact that I had this whole new comic book scene to explore. And not only that, but a whole new attitude towards graphic art, because you have this whole bande dessinée scene that's a completely different world, you know, and I'm going to thrive on it. We're going to have a lot of stuff.
Of course, in Montreal, there's many different communities, but of course, there's always been the English and the French community living side by side, and the French community, their tradition is huge. So many, many cartoonists participating, a lot of comic art being done, and because of the European influence that they have, there's not a lot of shame, there's not a lot of self-consciousness on that side of things. On the English side of things, it's a little more self-conscious, and I believe that's the enemy of good work. But we try and do the best we can with the resources we got.
It's one way of putting it, yes.
Sorry, I couldn't give you a better lead in
there. No, that's okay. You're not feeding me the lines, Bernie.
No, I'm on my rant. Okay, Robin, why don't you tell us a little bit about your qualifications for this radio host job that you got going now?
Well, it all started when I went to the Alternative Press Expo in 1997, and I lied and told a bunch of people that I had a radio show, but I actually knew I was going to get a radio show, and these were all the interviews in preparation for that, so that when I actually did start the radio show, I had all these awesome interviews. So that was in 97, 98, and I did a radio show in Vancouver for 7 years. It was called The Onomatopoeia Show, and again, the show about comics and all sorts of stuff. I just had to do a lot of prep for that show on a continual basis. It was a weekly show as well. It was an hour-long show. I did a lot of interviews. The other things that I have that qualify me is also I've worked in comic book stores for like 5 years. I've put together 2 comic book fundraiser anthologies for Little Sisters Fight Against Comic Book Censorship against Canada Customs. I've also done like speaking pieces and documentaries because I am quite knowledgeable about comics. I've written articles for the Comics Journal. I did a short overview of the Vancouver comic book scene from 1960 to 2000. I've been published in other comic books, short stories that I've written that have been illustrated by my friends. I've done speaking engagements at libraries for people who don't really know much about comics or about specific comics. I've also taught classes about art, but I don't draw, which was a lot of fun. And I like, because I like to teach younger children about the love of comics. And also, last but not least, and what I feel is the most important thing, is I buy and read a lot of comics.
That's a very important function. Without the support of, you know, a lot of people, Lord knows, this whole art form would die away overnight.
And so those are all the things that I feel qualify me for this job.
And they certainly do a good job. My goodness, you've been really involved in the medium for a long time.
Well, I did a speaking engagement at BAMP for a comic craze symposium. And one of the things that the woman who was putting together the show found amazing was that it seemed wherever I went, I kind of created a comic book, not a community necessarily, but like a sort of hub of activity where people could meet other people and get in touch with other people. And of course, because I'm continually supporting local work, a lot of people are getting mentioned that might not have been mentioned before, and you're getting noticed. And there's like a snowball effect that kind of revolves around me, I guess.
Definitely. If you're causing excitement and talking about it, the art form, in a way that, you know, grants it some dignity and a little bit of nobility, then I guess it'll make people feel okay. Like they can experiment with this stuff without being thought of as being retrograde in some way. So that's excellent. Do you find that there are a lot of other women that you know that are open to the medium these days? Because it was still sort of like a boys' bathroom kind of effect. It was all the time I was in comics, you couldn't get a woman to sort of look at the medium in any sort of way that she could enjoy it. Somehow it was like...
Well, the biggest problem... I'm sorry if I'm cutting you off, but the biggest problem is... I find this so often, especially because I used to work in comic book stores, is boys really want to get girls into comics. That's cool, whatever. My girlfriend, my wife, my daughter, that's fine. But they don't know what to give them, and they give them the wrong stuff. I'm sorry, but giving your sister The Watchmen was wrong, because she does not have the history in superhero comics that you have to understand the depth and the magnitude of that comic book
series.
But
it's brilliant.
It is, but you have to build to that. You have to give her something she can relate to so that she gets into the medium and enjoys it, and then bring her to that point. I'm not denying that The Watchmen is brilliant.
It's brilliant.
It is. But, so, because I, as a woman, have spent a lot of time trying to get women into comics, and I don't want to toot my own horn, but I don't think I've ever failed. My mother, she's the only person I've ever failed. The only reason she ever read a comic was because Vicky Gabbro recommended it. And that was Spiegelman's Mouse. But when I said, "Mom, you got to read this brilliant comic," she was all like, "Oh, it's so depressing. It's about the war." And I'm like, "Yeah, it is. But
so I
it's good."
I would have been better off giving my sister a copy of Sandman then.
No, that's too deep too, because I've tried to give somebody Sandman and they don't know how to read that comic because it goes all over the map. It's a crazy comic. That's something for comic literaries that, you know, it's, you really have to, again, have a history in comics to read it. That's why I suggested like Strangers in Paradise. That's a pretty straightforward sort of drama comic. It's just like a soap opera, and it's well drawn, and it's heartfeltly written, and I think things like that are really good. I could give a whole list.
Yeah, well, you mentioned What's Michael, and that's a comic work that I just discovered a few years ago. A Japanese comic, I don't remember the artist's name, but a wonderful series about fantasies involving cats.
Yeah, basically, Michael is like every cat in the world. And my favorite thing about Michael, the thing that got me right into it, was how whenever the cats get caught doing something wrong, or they fall down or something silly happens, they do this bizarre little dance that's supposed to like distract you from what just happened. It's like, what am I reading?
Yeah,
it's a comic book for cat lovers, but it's really cute, and like kids can get into it, and it's like, it's totally applicable for all ages. And you know, there's weird things, like there's like this Yakuza gang member who's terrified of cats, and it's pretty silly, but yeah, I like it. And the art's very expressive.
Yeah, I thought it was very well done comics myself, and that's some of the work that I enjoy the most from Japan these days. So, out of all the comic art traditions in the world, European, Japanese, no doubt African, Asian, Middle Eastern. There's so many different comic art traditions everywhere. What's your favorite one out of all the stuff that you've experienced so far? Do you think any one place on Earth has a lock on a superior way of doing things?
You know, that's a really good question. I might say the Japanese, only because they've been doing it for so long and they've had such freedom of movement, whereas in the American medium, it's been a long, the freedom was a long time coming. Like, it wasn't until the 60s where people started really branching out and trying new things with comics as a medium. Europe, I mean, Europe is interesting and everything, but to me, Japan is more fascinating just because of the history and the culture and how comics came to be in that part of the world and how much variety there is in the artists. And even currently, like, I find that there's some really interesting Japanese comics out there that there's so much variety in. I mean, a lot of people complain that it all looks the same, but you really have to know what you're looking at. Again, we'll do a show about manga, and I will talk about some of the great manga there is out there. Like, one of my favorites is Battle Royale. I totally love that comic. And the detail is so finite and excellent, and the story is just like this story about teenagers killing each other for the government. It sounds really brutal, but like as someone who works with children, it's really a sociological experiment that's totally fascinating to read about.
Yeah, and as a parent, I could see it all too easily myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, Japan, I agree. What a wonderful cultural export that country has given us over the years. What about, there's also a tradition between commercial comics and non-commercial or more art-oriented comics. Especially in North America, you have the Marvel and DC mainstream superhero comic book publishers who are financially superior in every way. Even their least selling comic book makes far, far more than something more
like 8-Ball.
artistically yeah. inclined. And yet, it seems like only over the last decade or so we've seen the rise of prestige in art comics and comics that aren't so concerned with an economic bottom line and that give you a story that has, you know, they try to be ambitious.
Well, they have no choice. They had no choice because there's no money in this medium and there probably never will be. So, well, actually, that's a big lie. Currently, there is money in this medium because Hollywood's strip mining the medium because the medium's been so free with ideas that they have nowhere else to look. But when you consider things like, for example, like Blankets, there's a comic that was made with blood, sweat, tears, heart, and soul. And he didn't do it because he was looking for a paycheck. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only way to make any kind of money in comics now. But even if you do that, you know, like, an 8-Ball is a perfect example. He even had a movie made, Ghost World, and another one, Art School Confidential. And the guy, Dan Klaus, is not rolling in the dough. You know what I mean? Like, he makes a brilliant, genius comic. Same with Chris Ware. Chris Ware has won bajillion awards, and he makes a beautiful comic. Like, to be honest, for the past 2 years, I've not really bought a lot of comics because I haven't had a lot of money, but I've always gotten the latest Acme Novelty Library because that thing is just a piece of genius work. And but again, these people are not making money hand over fist. You just got to really love the medium. That's where it's at.
Right, but you've just mentioned people that actually do make something of a living among the sort of art comic artists.
Yeah, but not as much as, like, say, Todd McFarlane, the mainstream press,
well,
like you were
none
saying.
None of them are spending $1 million on a baseball, no.
No. That's the greatest thing about this show. We're going to talk about all that kind of stuff. We're going to talk about Todd McFarlane. We're going to talk about underground comics, alternative comics, how much money they're making, how much they're not making, just, like, everything. Everything you can possibly imagine. And if you have ideas, you can even send them along. Like, it's going to be awesome.
That's right. We're going to have a website address for later on for people that want to take that down and perhaps communicate over the internet where you can go into much greater detail. Okay, Robin, so your radio show is going to be mainstream friendly, right? You're going to be talking about Spider-Man and Superman as well as Mouse.
To a certain extent, I'll definitely be focusing on the alternative, the local, and the non-mainstream, but I have to admit, I do have a fondness for Marvel, and I've found that, you know, if you do a bit of digging, a lot of these mainstream companies have some really excellent artists, and once in a blue moon tell some really good stories. So, yeah, there will be a lot of, not tons, but there will definitely be mainstream content.
So, give us an example of some people you've interviewed in the past.
Well, I'd have to say my two biggest interviews for me were Neil Gaiman and Harvey Pekar. I did Neil Gaiman before he wrote Anansi Boys, and also I interviewed Harvey Pekar after the movies. They, to me, are seminal figures in the comic book industry. They're just huge, and it was kind of nerve-wracking but fun. I really enjoyed my interview with the Panda Brothers, which is kind of funny because, you know, they worked on Grendel and you worked on Grendel.
Yeah, they were a very fine a duo, brother team that would share tasks in the artwork. And even their father became involved drawing the plants in some of their comics.
Cool, I had no idea. or maybe I did. It's been so long since I've listened to that interview, but that was when I went to San Diego for the first time, and that was a very interesting time.
The San Diego Comic Con, that's one of North America's largest comic conventions, and it's becoming more and more in the news each year. That's quite an event, no?
Yeah, well, it's a big media blitz, and I only went once, and I'm pretty satisfied about not going again, because as a person who had the radio show, I did a lot of interviews, and I also wanted to sit in on a lot of talks. One of the talks I saw that just blew me away was I got to see Paul Chadwick talk about pre-1930s artists that influenced him, and, like, seriously, it was such an education. It was fantastic. And I saw, like, Phoebe Glockner talk about her comic, Ben Catcher talk about his. They had a big, giant EC Comics reunion. Mary Severin was there. I ended up interviewing so many cool people, like Jordan Crane. Mark Hempel was a big one for me, because I totally loved Gregory and his Vertigo Sandman Kindly Ones comic. I also got to interview Mary Fleener. It's kind of funny, because, like, last weekend I went through my old tapes to try to have like a catalog of what I had, and I was listening to a bunch of those interviews, and I myself was surprised at all the interviews I had.
So I guess one convention gives you about a year's worth of radio material.
It did, and unfortunately at the San Diego Con, I was just running around like a chicken with my head cut off, and everyone was like, what'd you buy? And I'm like, I didn't buy anything. I had no time for myself except for in the evening. And that's when it got really fun, because I was with this guy, Steve Rolston, who does a lot of comics for Oni, and he's done some stuff for DC now, and another guy, a writer, Dave Rest, who's done articles for the Comics Journal, and we rented a hotel room at the Hyatt Regency, where all the other comic book artists were. So we're sitting there in the lobby, and we're listening to Eddie Campbell talk about his orange trees in New Zealand, and Dinah Schutz is there as well, and they're all having a good time, and somebody bumps into me, and I'm about to turn around and, you know, yell at them, and it turns out to be Kevin Eastman, backed up by Simon Bisley, and they're, like, kind of big guys, so it's just like, oh my god, it's Kevin Eastman. There's Steve Dillon drinking in the corner with a bunch of people, and I got to interview, like, Brian Wood long before he became super huge, and yeah, it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, I guess a lot of these people are really approachable. They're nice people. It's something about working really hard all alone in a studio that makes you really happy to be out and socializing, and it's, of course, very flattering to have anybody want to know about what you're up to.
Well, the good thing I find, I have two things going in my favor in regards to approaching these people and interviewing them, is A, I'm a girl, and that seems to help, and B, I actually know what I'm talking about, so when the interview starts and they hear what I have to say, it's not like a gushing fan boy or girl, rather, it's somebody who has a very educated opinion about their art style and what they're trying to create.
Yeah, well, that's great. I'm sure it's going to work out fine, especially welcome to Montreal.
Thanks.
You know, because there's a ton of people here that are really dedicated to the medium, and they're really good, especially in the French community. Huge, huge number of people working really hard. Quite a few people working for Europe these days. I'm sure you're going to get to know them all, and I look forward to hearing them being interviewed on your program.
Well, definitely. I definitely want to explore that avenue of comics in the city. And there's, you know, it's really neat, like, I was at my local Loblaws, and they were selling these DVDs for, like, $5, and they had, like, a Mobius cartoon, and, I mean, of course, I don't know anything that they're saying, but it's a good way to learn, right? And then I was in Rossi a couple of days ago, and for $4, I got Kapustin Zotsky, the cartoon that was Louis Trondheim's. He did, like, the French-Canadian cartoon, some, I don't know, maybe it was the Teletoon or some company, French-Canadian cartoonist cartoon company did Kapustin Zotsky. It's, like, these, they're the ultimate obliviators, these two aliens who are always trying to take over whatever planet they land on, and it's totally absurd and hilarious. But it's Louis Trondheim, like, it's so awesome.
Yeah, no, he's another European artist, along with Johann Spahr, who are very big superstars over there now, yeah. And their work is only just being introduced in English in North America.
Yeah, like, Johann Spahr, I totally adore his stuff. Like, The Rabbi's Cat, I don't know if you've ever read that.
I'm not very well read, being in the lower income bracket, like many artists in Montreal. The only comics I get to read are what people like you might lend me. So I look forward to all that stuff. But I know what's out there because I hear about it. So, Robin, what do you like about Montreal?
Well, comic book wise, let me tell you, when I first came to Montreal, like, eons ago, my number one thing that I had to do was go check out the Drawn and Quarterly offices. And I walked down the street and I ended up passing the place like 3 times. And I was like, this, I don't, it's a department complex. I don't get this. So I went and I called, and Chris Oliveros was like, yeah, that's it. It's in my apartment. And he's like, you know, I'd love to have you over, but I just got my child down to sleep and I don't want them to wake up. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. So I was really excited to move to the city where the Drawn and Quarterly publishing empire is. And it's steadily grown by leaps and bounds. And now they actually have their own store. And I've only been in it once, only because I can't even afford to be tempted by easily, the stuff in there. $200 yeah, in an instant. No, like, no problem I could spend in there. And it's just, it's heartbreaking for someone like me. But, you know.
Hopefully one day.
Yeah, soon I'll be rolling in the dough. And I'll be able to shop in there with pride and hold my head high as I purchase my things.
Well, one thing I notice about that shop, it's in my neighborhood where I live, and I walk by it a lot. And every time I look in there, it's pretty full, and quite a few of the patrons are women. So I think that makes me very happy that it's bringing both sexes or more involved in the medium. Because when I started out, it was very much a male thing. And so I'm happy that it's more open now.
Yeah. Me too. I mean, so many times I've gone into comic book stores and it's either been really creepy guys hitting on you or they just treat you like an idiot. And it's kind of weird because a lot of the times I tend to know more about comics than the people that are treating me like an idiot. Yeah. But you can't, yeah, you can't really say that without sounding like an egomaniac. But now I got a radio show, so it's all good. I can be an egomaniac on air.
you use that power for good.
Yeah, with great power comes responsibility.
Great responsibility. Yeah, classic.
Yes, Peter Parker was good for something.
You know, Stan Lee sued Marvel?
Yeah, I heard about that, yeah.
Isn't that, you know?
Well, you know, he's ancient now. I think he's like 90-something. I could be wrong, but he, you know, he needs more money. More money.
What was just funny is...
I gotta tell you, do you know the last time I saw Stan Lee, it was a cameo. Do you know what I was watching? It was the most insane thing I'd ever seen.
Spider-Man 3?
No, it was a cameo in The Princess Diaries 2. He played somebody's old grandfather from, I think, Latin America, a continent, who makes a total pass at Julie Andrews. It was so gross. And it was Stan Lee.
Oh, my God.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, what am I watching?
I guess he gets work.
Money, right? It's all money. Maybe he's old friends with Miss Andrews. Who knows?
Well, he was living out there on the West Coast for a long time. Who knows who his neighbors were?
I think he's still out there.
No?
Yeah. Well, his wife, she's like a model / actress. Now they're retired, obviously. But, yeah. Stan Lee, we'll be talking about him. No, I don't know. Well, I don't know. Maybe. Maybe we'll talk about
Stan Lee. Why, you're going to do a show about publishers' nephews?
Well, you know, I have talked about Stan Lee in the past in regards to romance comics. So that's why I was kind of like thinking maybe we'll talk about Stan Lee. Maybe.
Well, hats off to Mr. Lee for not using his real name on any of his work.
Well, it's juvenile literature. Who wants to be associated with that?
Yeah, well... Mr. Lieber, on the other hand, I appreciate his fake Elizabethan nuggets of wisdom as told through the mouths of Thor and Galactus.
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. Anyways, thanks for interviewing me, Bernie, and letting the people out there in listener land learn about me.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I look forward to listening to your show, Robin, on Sunday. I'll be there doing the dishes and... you know, tidying up and learning about the world of comic art.
It'll be awesome.
Awesome.
Excelsior!